Yuling Guang, you know, was just on and talking about Emily Henry, and her new book is out today. The only other two things that I wanted to talk about that are coming out today are Providence by Craig Wills, which is a really fun queer campus novel that is a little bit like The Talented Mr. Ripley. And I think this is a weird thing for me to say, but I'll just say it. And it's not a weird thing, but I think that the book is so much, I don't love the cover to this book. I think that the book, it makes it look like a YA book, and it's absolutely not that. I think it's a much more adult book, but it's, I really enjoyed it. The other thing that looks really interesting to me today that is coming out is Justin Taylor's Reboot, which is described as a raucous and wickedly smart satire of Hollywood, toxic fandom, and our chronically online culture, following a washed-up actor on his quest to revive the cult TV show that catapulted him to teenage fame. It's getting fantastic reviews. So I'm really interested to read that.
I know. And I'm really looking forward to Bad Habit by Alana S. Portero. It is combining the vulnerable realism of Shuggie Bain with the poignance of Almodovar's films, a staggering coming of age deeply rooted in the struggles of a trans woman growing up in Madrid. I know, sounds so good.
It sounds really good.
But speaking of things that are coming out soon, this fantastic lineup of upcoming and up-and-coming debut authors, I am just so stoked. On today's episode, we have Jiaming Tang's Cinema Love, and that comes out on May 7th. Melissa Mogollon, whose book Oye comes out on May 14th.
Oh, yeah.
And we have Yael Vanderwooden's The Safe Keep, which comes out on May 28th.
These books are on fire. They're on fire.
And as we always say, if you like what you're hearing, please share us with your friends. Here at Gaze Reading, it's greatly appreciated. Follow us at Gaze Reading on Instagram. You can... What are other ways to get in touch with us? You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. And while you're at it, even while you're listening right now, hop on over and give us a 5-star review so that more people will find us. Because the more reviews we have, the higher we get on the list of findable things. And thank you to those of you who have taken the time to write a review. It really means
really
a lot.
Appreciate it. Yes.
All of the books that we talk about today, you can find on our bookshop.org page. The link to that is in our show notes. Pre-orders are super, super helpful for authors in general. They are tremendously helpful for debut authors. You can pre-order audiobooks. You can save them at the library, putting a hold on it at the library. Mm-hmm. All of those things in advance are so helpful to authors any day of the week, but for debut authors especially. It's also worth saying, we talked to these authors for so long. There is so much bonus content, especially for in general, but for this episode in particular. We talked to Melissa for an hour, and you're getting maybe 15 minutes of her. Check out our Patreon. Link is in our show notes. If you subscribe there, you get access to all of our bonus content and information in advance and a little newsletter from Brett. There's a whole lot of stuff. Check out our Patreon. It's only $5 a month for the cost of a coffee.
It's actually less than a cup of coffee. So there you go.
Less than a cup of coffee.
Exactly right.
Conversations today will be in order of release day. So we're going to start with Jiaming Andy Tang to talk about his book, Cinema Love. A little about Andy is what was what his friends call him. And now that we're his friends, we call him. He's a queer immigrant writer. He holds an MFA from the University of Alabama, and his writing has appeared in such publications as AGNI, Lit Hub, Joyland Magazine, and elsewhere. He is a 22-23 Center for Fiction Emerging Writer Fellow and lives in Brooklyn, New York. Cinema Love is his first novel. Then we'll kick on over to Melissa. And Melissa Mogollon holds an MFA in fiction from the Iowa Writers Workshop and a BA from George Washington University. Originally from Columbia and raised in Florida, she now teaches at a boarding school in Rhode Island where she lives with her partner and dog. Oye is her first novel. And Yael Vanderwooden is a writer and a teacher. She lives in Utrecht, Netherlands. And The Safe Keep is her first novel. I'm Jason.
And I'm Brett.
And enjoy this upcoming and up-and-coming episode of
Gaze. Reading. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
How
for
are you?
Being here.
I'm good. So nice to meet you guys.
You too.
You too.
You got your MFA from the University of Alabama, but your bio doesn't say where you're from.
I grew up in New York, so I went to Alabama for graduate school.
No offense, but I couldn't help but think, oh, you must be from the South if that's where you ended up going.
I wouldn't mind people mistaking you from the South, but no, not Alabama.
And then I was like, is novel number two going to be what it was like growing up in the Deep South?
Right.
I was like, something isn't matching.
I should have came in with an accent.
That would have been brilliant.
Howdy, y'all.
I'm so excited.
It's so funny. Because they thought that this was a Chinese accent, but I had to explain that I was gay. This is just like...
This is just my gay voice.
It's just sometimes gay people talk differently. I don't know how to explain it.
Wait, who's they? Like when you say people, just like everyone from Alabama?
Not everyone. Very well-meaning people from the local community. They're like, where are you from? I'm like, you sound different. And I'm like, I'm just gay. I'm sorry. I'm from New York. Which is the same thing as telling them I'm gay.
It's a blanket thing that covers a lot.
I know.
Oh my God.
I was like, could it be classmates? Could it be like the woman that runs the dry cleaner? It was maybe both.
I was not talking to the woman who ran the dry cleaners, but mostly just people, locally. I used to work in publishing. Normally books take a long time to write, but then I started meeting a lot of people who wrote books in 2 years, and it was during lockdown, and that was just like a very interesting material thing that happened. The time that it took to write a book also seemed to shorten in certain ways for some people.
We were just talking to Douglas Westerbeek, who wrote a book called A Short Walk Through a Wide World, and he works at a library, at one of the largest libraries in the country. And you could tell that he's always had wanderlust and always had a love of books. And it poured out in this novel. And I said to him, I was like, Doug, if you never write another book, this is all of your heart and soul in this novel. And so it almost, the concept of authors, like, quote unquote, needing to write another book is so crazy to me. Because I'm like, you're probably spent.
I feel exactly the same way. It's just like people keep asking me, like, what am I working on for my next book? Or like, when am I going to start? And I'm like, fundamentally, I have not changed as a person since I wrote this first book, which is really just like all of my bottom shelf trauma. I have not grown enough to reach the higher shelves. I'm just stuck. I tried to write something new, but it was just a different flavor of, it was like Diet Coke of cinema. It's not as good, but it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I have not grown past it yet.
So how are you feeling? Why don't you tell our readers, what's your elevator pitch about your book? Our readers, our listeners. They're readers too.
They're readers.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't readers. They're just listeners. And that's okay.
Yeah. Cinema Love is a novel about gay men in rural China and the woman who married them. And much of the narrative is centered around this theater where gay men cruise for love and where they build a community in which they feel safe being queer. But for me, the emotional thrust of the book was always their wives and these women who I guess their ambitions and their own desires intersect with those of the men, and the ways in which these two groups of people move across time from 1980s in China to present day New York.
That was very good.
Yeah, good.
Thank you.
And taking a sip of tea. As though you're on a talk show. You're like, let me tell. Okay, I'm going to take a sip.
This is the moment where the audience is there.
They clap. I know. Right. My mic dropped. It's just me taking a sip of tea.
So you said this was like bottom shelf trauma for you.
It is.
Can you talk a little bit about like how your bottom shelf trauma intersects writing this book?
It's not trauma in the sense where it's autobiographical. It's bottom shelf trauma in the sense where I am a gay man from a community where homosexuality doesn't culturally or socially exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I'm writing about these characters and the ways in which they feel like they need to hide their desire, or the ways in which they don't even know how to communicate it in the absence of a queer lineage. I'm talking by proxy about myself when I was at a younger age. And the other part of the book that sort of really looms large is the immigrant narrative part. And my relationship to being an immigrant is different from the traditional, I guess, immigrant narrative in the sense that I came to America when I was 2. I very much grew up here. But the communities that my characters live in and exist in, like these sort of decaying apartments that they tried so hard to make beautiful, and these sort of like jobs where they were exploited by people in similar situations, but who came here first, that was very much the patina of my childhood. And so it really colored my, I guess it colored my descriptions that run through this book, even though it's not autobiographical at all.
The biggest surprise for this book, and it's something you touched on, and I love this, is it really, I was not expecting it to be about the women like it was. I thought it was going to be based on the blurb. Here's the story about these men and trying to find love. And so it so surprised me in the best way.
At its core, it is about the men, but the rest, the meat around it.
Yeah. It's like the framework is the men, but the, oh my God.
Yeah. And it's, and not to put my like white male privilege over it, but as, but what is interesting for me reading it, I have a handful of friends who have, whether it's recently come out as bisexual or have been bisexual and are in straight presenting relationships.
Yeah.
And they're navigating what it means to also be fully fulfilled sexually, romantically, emotionally.
Right.
And so I'm seeing some parallels between what those friends are going through and the characters in the book, which is something that I don't think a lot of people think about.
Yeah. And the other thing that I was thinking about, this is like a tangential relationship, is that I've met a lot of people in the States who either grew up in more industrial, like the kind of town where there's a central religion that is the culture, like a small Rust Belt Bible town where people experience the same things, where in the book, in the context of the book, they're living in China, which it's not like homosexuality is explicitly like illegal there. I don't know that you would be arrested for being gay, but there's such a culture of saving face that you pretty much can't, for fear of shaming your family, for fear of losing your job, you pretty much can't openly be even feminine as a man in many parts of these or working class parts of China. And I think that there are a lot of people in the Deep South that are still having those experiences too.
In the Deep South, in Hollywood, in sports.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating, I think, for people to, I'm excited for people to read this book and almost think of it as being so removed, because 1980s China is like not the same. But to really look at it and be like, oh, wait, this feels a lot more familiar than I even realized. And themes of relationships and love and non-romantic love and what these, or romantic but not sexual, and just like what these things mean. And I think really shares a spectrum of these relationships that I don't think enough people think about.
And it reminds me too, I remember when I was in my MFA program, this was like maybe 2021 or 2022, and I was workshopping a chapter of the novel. And then I think somebody asked me about, okay, so these characters, these gay characters now in New York, why aren't they hooking up with other people? Like, why aren't they doing that? And it was like, I don't think this person said it out of malice, or, but it was so strange for them to say it, because just me growing up in America, I didn't feel comfortable being openly gay, not just in Alabama, but parts of New York. And so there are different thresholds that these people cannot cross. In the book,
this is your debut. What are you excited for? What are you looking forward to?
Oh my God, I don't know, actually, because it's so harrowing to be a debut novelist, because for so long it's a private thing, like you're not sharing the thing that you're working on with other people, and now I am. And not only that, I'm sharing something that I've written about many years ago, And so my relationship with the book has now evolved beyond the point where I remember many things about it. It's like a homecoming. I'm excited to revisit it. I'm excited to revisit it with other people who are visiting it as the first time as my guide. That's how I'm thinking about it. I'm excited to go to the UK to go on a little mini tour. But those are the things that really bring me joy.
You have two beautiful covers too.
My friend calls the American cover tastefully horny.
Oh, I love tastefully horny.
Yeah.
Do you have other upcoming books, debut authors that you want to shout out?
Oh my God, can you guys just talk to Melissa? I'm so excited by Oyer. I'm excited by Helen Phillips's Hum coming out, I think, in August. And there's this book that I read when I was in the UK last year. And it's a neo-Western called The Borrowed Hills. I think it's actually out today at the time of recording in the UK.
Ooh.
But it comes out in America in June. And it was one of those books where I came in expecting a very masculine, violent kind of narrative. And it is that in certain ways, but it's so sincere. It's so tender. It's a book about loneliness. It's really the best book that I read last year. And it's coming out in June in the States. It's called The Broad Hills. It's so good.
Cinema Love is, you know, sort of a love story. How did you meet your partner? Tell us how you fell in love.
This is so funny. My partner was like, are they going to ask about me? Like, about everyone? I'm like, no, of course not. Like, why would they ask?
Sorry.
And we met during the MFA program. We were both writers. I was a fiction writer. And my partner's name is Josh. They go by they, them pronouns. And
hi, Josh.
Shout out to Josh. And they were a nonfiction writer. And I don't know, we just clicked. It's I think it's a thing where they didn't have a car, so they went everywhere by bike. And I didn't know how to drive, so I was landlocked. It was the thing where it's like when you're in an unfamiliar place and you're both gay and you don't know how open you can be, like you just draw towards other people who share that experience. And the other thing is that they had just come back from Korea. They were teaching English in Korea on a Fulbright grant. And so they were experiencing culture shock. And so was I, in the sense that I was coming from a big city to a really small town.
Yeah.
So we just bonded. One day we were trying to go to the grocery store, and we were trying to go to one that like was new to us. It was like a little bit fancy, but like on Google Maps, it said it was like 12 minutes away, but then we were on the side of a highway.
Yeah.
It's just like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Or did you realize I've sometimes done on Google Maps where it would be like 4 minutes. And I'm like, is this taking a lot longer? And realizing I'm still on the driving directions and not actually on the walking directions.
No.
I've done that.
Andy, this is so fun. Congratulations.
Thank you for having me, guys.
So excited for you.
Truly fantastic book. Really so self-assured. And so it does not feel like what I would have expected a debut to feel like, whatever that is. It's really fantastic. So
thank you. And it was so nice to meet you guys. It was so much fun.
And now we have Melissa Mogollon talking to us about Oye.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good afternoon, almost.
Good afternoon.
I still can't get over that we're both 954 kids.
Yes, and Santi Sanchez is also a 954 kid, which
yes.
I messaged you about. But then I also found out that Alexander Tanner, Parkland. I was like, you guys, we need to do a study in Broward County.
Jason, I think you need to take this up. I think there needs to be a Florida Book Festival and focus it on all the Florida
There's
writers.
There's a Miami Book Festival, the Miami Book Fair. There should be like a specific.
Yeah.
There really should be like a Florida panel.
Yeah.
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 The Florida panel handle.
No.
I was like DMing Alexandra, or I think she goes by Alex. I'm not sure. We're not friends, but she's very friendly with each other.
She's lovely. We love her.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
And she was like, we should just do a reading somewhere in the kind of somewhere on the Sawgrass Expressway. I was like, perfect.
The Sawgrass Mall.
At that. Yeah. At like the Rainforest Cafe, which Santi actually posted a photo in front of on social media recently. That was like elite dining. I had to beg my parents to take me to Rainforest Cafe.
Dining.
And I was put in an etiquette class in elementary school, I think. And the final exam was we had to go and dine at Rainforest Cafe and like use the right fork and order correctly and sit like a lady and not like Florida BS.
That's so funny.
Wow.
Brett, have you ever been to a Rainforest Cafe?
No.
Are they only in Florida? Was that the only one?
Oh my God, I did not realize I was Florida core. I thought this was national.
No. I thought so too.
What's the thing besides the name? What do they do? Is there soundtracks of monkeys squawking overhead?
Oh, yes. You nailed it. And like a certain hour of the evening, there's the thunderstorm hour.
Yes, thunderstorm.
And then all the animals start freaking out. And it actually scares a lot of the children.
And
it,
like, there's lightning and thunder. And...
it's the best part. They have a really good molten cake, I think, unless I'm confusing. I mean, I know Chili's has one because that was also super Florida core. I grew up going to Chili's every week.
Melissa, yeah. Exactly. Breaking news. Not only is it national, there's one in France. There's one in Malta. There's one in the UAE. There's one in Japan.
Oh, I bet the Japan one's good. They probably have real monkeys.
It is worldwide,
baby. You know how McDonald's in different countries and territories has always its different flair and stuff. Like, I'm so curious what the Rainforest Cafe.
Do we do a tour?
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I wish.
But also, like, the food was garbage, or it was like not, it's not like good food.
I never knew that as a child.
No, of course not. It's about the experience.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us about Oye. Have you come up with your elevator pitch yet?
I like tried to do one right before this because I knew it was coming. And I just feel like I change it each time. But it's so
that's, what
today's
is it, right?
Elevator. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Today's elevator pitch is, I said, Oye, to me, is about a young Colombian-American girl growing up in South Florida who has to spend her senior year taking care of her grandmother, who is her favorite person, absolutely bonkers, and unfortunately terminally ill. So it's kind of Luciana's journey, the protagonist, to self-acceptance and love unexpectedly through taking care of her grandmother. But it's a comedy, so it's supposed to be very funny, even though it does deal with the kind of heavier themes of maybe generational trauma, homophobia, and a lot of the isms that come with growing up a teenager in South Florida that might not fit the traditional narrative. There it is.
There's also, it's a very unique way you tell the story as well. Can you just tell a little bit about that?
Yes. The book is essentially a compilation of phone calls over the course of 1 year between the protagonist, Luciana, and her older sister, Mari, who is away at school, but you only get Luciana's side. So it's her side of the conversation, talking to her older sister. And she's giving her updates about everything big and small, about what's going on, begging for help, begging for her to come home, begging for some perspective, for some context. So like, why is our family like this? And how am I supposed to deal and become my full self? So yeah, it's on the phone, which my goal was at some point that almost fell to the background for people as they were reading. It became almost intuitive to the way this character would speak. And I tried writing this book in a lot of different ways. And I was just like, no one's going to deliver it like Luciana would talking. Mm. Because even her own interior voice as first person, she's probably a lot nicer and subdued in her own head than how her rage is so much more striking and funny and just scathing when she's actually on attack mode, when she's verbally, you know, coming at her sister. So it wasn't like, I'm going to do this and it's only this way. I really tried a bunch of different ways. I took her off the phone. I had Maddie talk. I had all these kinds of things. And just no one did it like Luciana. I was like, I got to let her talk. And I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, probably for everybody. But, you know, for those who it was for, I was hoping it would be a pretty fun, enriching experience.
It's interesting to really only get a piece of the story. You could essentially write a companion book where it's it's Mari's story. She's not like leaving voicemails, right?
No,
it's literally, you're getting one side of a conversation. It's like sitting next to a stranger.
Yes.
In a park.
Hearing only
their side. And you're right. At first, it was, jarring is not the right word, but it was like, you crave the other side when there is an argument. You just wonder like, oh God, what did her sister say? That so very unique. And this reader's opinion is that it did in fact fall to the background. And it was interesting to see, oh, what's the next phone call going to be? It's also great. Like when there is a structure, it's like a safe space for a reader.
Yeah. Yeah. I love to hear that. I also think, a cool effect of the structure, which wasn't my intention, but as I was reading it more, I said, this is awesome, is you are alone with her thoughts, the way she is experiencing her reality. Mm-hmm. And also reality doesn't even matter because what is how she's experiencing it, which is the effect you get as she's responding. It's almost like whatever Mari said does matter, of course. But at the end of the day, this is how Luciana's experiencing that feeling and that's how she's responding. And also, what was I going to say about her being... You said something about your craving. Oh, yeah, like you're craving another voice. Mm-hmm. I love that you said that because that's a feeling that I think Luciana has as well. She's craving someone to give her directions, perspective, help, influence. And that's why she's calling her sister so much. So I like that you had a parallel experience.
Yeah. But also, like, anyone who A, has a sibling, B, has had family drama, C, just needed to talk to another person for advice. Like, it's so relatable.
Yeah. That was like my goal.
The sequel is Oy Vey, and it's the Jewish friend.
That is so amazing. Yes. Nico can be Jewish. Her friend can be Jewish.
Oh my God, Oy Vey. That is hilarious.
It's Nico's perspective calling Luciana being like, girl, what is going
what
on?
What is going on? Yeah. It's a chill.
Oy Vey, come to my bar mitzvah.
Yes. Oye, I don't know if we talked about this, but Oye means a lot of things. But one of its variations in Spanish is like, listen up. Like, oye. So that's the title is oye.
It's not the translation is not the same.
No, but it could be used like Oy Vey, like oye, come on.
Do you have a Hurricane Wilma story?
Hurricane Wilma. I was in fourth or fifth grade. I do remember that
I was about to graduate high school.
2 weeks off of school. This is amazing. But no major damage with that one.
It was just so funny because you talk about using hurricane evacuation as vacation. And I was like, that is so real. I literally, during Hurricane Wilma, our power was out for 2 weeks. Our school power was out for two weeks.
Yeah.
Most importantly.
That's why we were out. Yeah.
Yeah. And my parents stayed home and me and my two sisters packed up and went with our neighbors to Disney World for a week.
No, you didn't.
A week, Disney World. I was like, this is the bougiest hurricane vacation.
Yeah.
It was so bizarre. And it was the first time we ever bought season passes because it was cheaper to buy. You bought season passes and then in turn, you got a discount on the hotels and you got a discount on food and you could go whenever you wanted for a week.
They probably had no blackout days then.
No. Because the rest of the city, the rest of the state was blacked out, literally.
Yeah, and no, but with Florida kids, it was like, we didn't know any better. It was the time off. And anytime I would be like, I love hurricanes, and I'd be like, don't say that. People die. Yeah.
Right. And also, there are some memories of just like, you put up the shutters, and it's dark, and it's cozy, which is so weird.
It's so messed up. It's so messed up. Yeah.
And I was the person when I was living in New York, and a hurricane would come, I ran around the building of my office being like, get your water bottles, do this, do that.
Fill up your bathtub. I think it might have been Wilma too. Like, we were like canoeing in the street. It was a blast. It was so unsafe because you're not supposed to be in the floodwater. But for kids, it was like 2 weeks off school. Yeah. And there was a lot of alligators too.
I know, literally. Okay, something else I have to talk to you about, especially because this is Gay's reading. Can you tell us when your obsession with Sandra Bullock started?
Sandra Bullock is totally Luciana's obsession. I wanted to give her an obsession. Mine is Rihanna. That is just like...
Oh, okay.
Everyone knows it. She's my everything. I love her. And I wanted to give her someone like that to just obsess over. And then I was thinking, like, who could this doctor potentially resemble to her? And I was thinking of who's iconic. Maybe it wouldn't typically be like everyone's like gay. Every gay girl's obsession. And I just thought I loved how... like severe Sandra Bullock can be sometimes in her roles. And I thought that Luciana would probably be like very responsive to that and love it. I do love Sandy. I think she's gorgeous. I love her. So no, that was all I thought she could have her. So I don't have an obsession with Sandra Bullock, but I was obsessed with Luciana calling her Dr. Sandra Bullock.
So was I.
As gays, we just have the complete utter power to just make anything into be a joke or anything about beauty. I think Aoi is so gay coded to me in the book. Like, she's a little twink to me, like Aoi. And there's so much about her that I love that I'm like, you're in the community.
I can't remember if I said this to you on Instagram or if I just have been thinking about it since the moment we became friends on Instagram. I'm obsessed with your engagement photos.
Oh, thank you.
Gorge. Thanks. So gorge. How dare the two of you.
Styled by me, designed by me, everything by me. Those photos, so we got engaged that day. We had a picnic. So I just moved to Rhode Island in August. We used to live in Glendale, and it's outside LA, which we talked about, I think. So we had this park that we loved, and I knew we wanted to do like a picnic and have a few little surprises for each other because we had talked about getting engaged for a long time. It was not a surprise. I got to design my ring. She got to design hers, and then we just paid for each other's. So we did a picnic where we kind of like...
Whose is more expensive?
I should know this.
I'm teasing.
Oh, I feel like it was hers by $500. No, but she loves to remind everybody of that. So you're right on. You're right on the nail there. Or maybe it was mine and she complained about it. I can't remember. But either she's way, obviously the one that, you know, thinks about these things, money. Uh-huh. I'm like, so we had a picnic. And then an hour after the picnic, we had the photographer come to document the moment. And we walked around the park and we took photos. But we did get our hair and makeup done that morning, which is part of the fun and getting pampered. Mm-hmm. And then I picked out our outfits and then went to Trader Joe's that morning, got like all the flowers and the snacks to make the picnic be cute. And then, yeah, I just got like champagne drunk in the park and took photos. It was really fun.
So fun.
I love that so much.
I know, Brett, you have to look at those pictures.
You had books that you had that you wanted to shout out.
Yes. Shout out your books that are upcoming that you're excited about.
So this one is There is a Rio Grande in Heaven by Ruben Reyes Jr. I don't know if you guys have seen it. This cover to me is stunning.
Yeah, beautiful.
So it's short stories about, I believe, Central America. I think Ruben is from Central America. But I do think I'm obsessed with short stories. I love them so much. So I was really excited to see this coming out. It comes out in 2024. Obviously, you guys know about Cinema Love already.
Yes.
Just stunning. So honored.
You're allowed to shout it out.
Okay, yes. No, I am. This is me shouting it out. And then... This is Brought Upsy by Christina already.
Yes. She was on our first episode of this, of Up and Coming, Upcoming. Love her.
I adore her. She's an amazing human. I knew her at school. Ruben also went to school, but he was a few years after me, but I knew of him through classmates. And then Victim, which came out in April? Jesus Christ. Oh, no, we're in April.
A couple weeks ago, maybe.
Yeah. March. Yeah.
March. By Andrew Bodija. And he's also an amazing writer and person. He lives in Miami. So we've been able to connect down there. But he's from New York originally.
Oh, how funny. Yeah. I know. We need to figure out a Florida contingent.
You have to.
We do. And I'm like trying to connect as many Florida writers with Mitchell Kaplan from Books and Books as much as possible. He's amazing and a great champion. And I know he would love to know as many new Florida voices.
Melissa, I'm obsessed with you.
You're adorable.
I know, I want to keep talking.
And I don't mean to reduce that and say you're adorable just because you look like you're 16. But you are so cute. I really wish I want to hug you.
I want to hug you too, Brad.
Really, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, I would love if you were my teacher because your kids must just so identify with you. They must just look at you and be like, oh my God, I'm so excited for you.
Well,
for the book, for all of you.
I was first attracted to Oye because of the cover and hello, freaking gorgeous. Do you know who designed it?
Yes. Alan Barry Reese. He's an Argentinian designer.
Nice. Cool. I know. I love to shout out book cover designers when we can.
He's tagged in my stuff on my Instagram. So if people want to check his stuff out.
This is so delightful.
I don't want to go.
I know. I don't want to go either.
Congrats on the
My
book.
Students are like, where
yeah,
are you?
Yeah, congrats. Yeah, exactly. So
oh my God. Are you going to teach right now? What are you teaching? Oh, English.
Yeah.
You have to go teach.
Yeah. No, today I'm just going to go be an admin. I have to plan. We have our big, it's called Day of Engagement coming. I have prom. I plan prom is next week. So that's happening.
Congrats. Okay.
Yes, so.
Oh my God.
Thank you.
Tis the season.
So exciting.
Tis the season.
Okay. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Hi, guys.
Bye. Bye. For a little bit of clarity, and I think everybody figured this out, 954 is the area code of the county in which we grew up in. So that's just like a little bit of context. But our listeners are smart, so you figured that out already. And now let's go on over to Yael talking to us about her book, The Safe Keep.
We're thrilled that you're here.
I'm so excited to be here. So excited to talk to you. I love your podcast so much. So this was a real joy.
You're very sweet.
We loved your book. I was at my son's school in Ohio last week, and I was flying home. So I read it on the flight, like one fell swoop.
Thank you so much. That's good. I keep on thinking, I've had several people tell me that they read it on airplanes. I'm just like, I'm so thrilled to be like an airplane book. That's what it, that works like that. Because that means that you just sit down and you want to get to the ending. And also, what a great way to not have to fully be present for a flight. I say as somebody who is very much afraid of flying.
Especially on Spirit Airlines.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brett, you should not be flying Spirit Airlines.
There's yeah,
that probably
Ohio.
Means nothing to you.
No, but there's it's like
short, that's what I assumed. I assumed I would translate it to EasyJet in my head.
Yes,
yeah. You basically have to pay for a seatbelt. Like you pay for everything. Yes.
And you are on like nothing more than like a bolted folding chair.
I know that there is some content of you already talking a little bit about the book online, but for our listeners, can you give us your elevator pitch for the book?
Absolutely, would love to. the book is about Isabel. And Isabel lives in her mother's old home in the Netherlands. It's 1961. And this house that Isabel lives in is her only pride and joy in life. She has nothing else going on. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have hobbies. God forbid hobbies. She doesn't have lovers, no friends. It's just this house and her desire to keep it just the way that it's always been. Everything needs to be neat and in order and in place. And this is her life until one day her brother Louis shows up with his new girlfriend, Ava. And Louis says, listen, I have to go on a business trip, so Ava must stay here. And Isabel says, absolutely not. And Louis says, that's too bad for you because, in fact, the house is on my name, so I get to make the decisions here. And Ava is everything that Isabel is not, right? Where Isabel is buttoned up and short of temper and very rigid in her ways. Ava is loud. She laughs a lot. She stays up late. She wakes up late and she touches everything. And then things start to disappear around the house. But it spirals out of control in many different directions that I hope will surprise the readers.
The way that I have been telling people about the book, as I've just texted friends being like, you need to read this because it's sapphic, Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah. Okay. I said, you know what?
The book or the movie?
The book.
Okay.
I said, you do for pears what Andre Assaman did for peaches.
Thank you. I will take that as a compliment, and other people can take it however they want, because I know people have very complicated feelings about that peach. And I had a friend who called it Queer Rebecca. And that was one that I was like, oh, yes. And then somebody else called it If the Portrait of a Lady on Fire was directed by Hitchcock. And yeah. When that one came along, I was like, that's the one I want. That's what I was trying to do, I think.
To be fair, I've never seen that movie. And maybe if I had, I would have felt that way. But I have read Call Me By Your Name. So for me, this was sapphic, Call Me By Your Name.
All of these together. I think it's creating an atmosphere. I think that people are expecting, okay, gay, but also, for some reason, there's the terror of Rebecca. There's the terror of Hitchcock. The Call Me By Your Name, for some people, the peach was a little bit terrifying. But that's for them to figure out.
For me, it's a matter of these two people that are not supposed to bond in any sort of way and then find themselves in a position where they do.
Yes. And it's the summer is a third character. The house is another character.
Yeah.
Which
probably 25 years ago, there was this play in New York with Sigourney Weaver, and it was called Sex and Longing. All I remember is Sigourney Weaver would sit on stage and she kept saying, sex and longing. I'm so full of sex and longing. And I kept thinking about it weirdly when I was reading this book.
It's so funny.
Exactly. Sex and longing. Yeah, that's where the book came from. Obviously written during the pandemic. Even though it's a surprise.
Totally changing gears. And I'm sure this is going to come up in every interview that you do, but talk about it more because we're gays reading. I'm obsessed that you teach erotic writing.
Listen, I wish we would ask about this more. By the way, as you're saying this, a massive rainbow has just appeared across the horizon.
Yes, meant to be. We sent that your way.
Thank you. It's very pretty.
Wait, so tell me more. How did teaching erotic writing come to be? How did you get into erotic writing? And I gotta say, the erotic writing that's in the book was like,
oh my God. Oh my God.
I couldn't believe how
turned on you were.
Yeah.
Yes. I said the same thing. I know, Jason. I was the same way. I was like, what is happening? I'm like on this plane. I was like, I'm so turned on right now in a way that some straight up gay erotica doesn't. I'm like, whatever.
I literally was like, am I bisexual?
Yes.
I was like, I totally understand the straight male.
Yes. The visual compliment. And yes. It comes down to what erotic writing is about, which is not about the people or the action or even the movements, right? The way that people move together. It's about, what did you just say, Brett? Longing and desire.
Sex and longing.
It's about the way that you create tension, specifically also leading up to the sexual encounter, let's call it. Because before the two characters end up having sex, you have, I don't know how many hundreds of pages of them just staring at each other, frustrated across the room. And the buildup towards it also goes very gradually. And then you also have to push and pull, right? At one moment, you think after they first kiss, you think that that's going to be the moment, but that's not the moment, right? Something happens in between, a brother shows up. Mm-hmm. And so the tension builds and builds. And so when the time comes, when they actually find each other, that sex is doing something for them internally, but also it's doing something for the plot. It's doing something for the storytelling. And through the sex, also we find out things about the character. So we are fully emotionally involved. We are incredibly tense because the buildup has been, for us as readers, also very high. And so we get to experience the relief of the plot, the relief of the tension, and through that also arousal. So I think it really, the way to create erotica and the way to create arousal as well has so little to do with the people, like the gender or the attraction of the characters on the page, and more the way that you set it all up and the way that you've pushed them together and the way that you've played with the reader as well. That's a big part that a lot of people don't want to think about too much. But I do think that one of the most important things.
There's also word choice. I think when people think of like erotica, or if you're going to write a quote unquote sex scene, there are specific words that come to mind, like thrust and whatever. And there are words that are like unsexy or just like typical. And I think if they're written in a more poetic way that like is on, you're on that journey, there's also a different experience there too.
Yeah, it's really about the texture. I hope I don't sound like a douche. But it's about the texture of the language in a moment like that.
That was a more articulate way of saying what I said.
No, that's why I was like, I hope texture doesn't sound very pretentious. But what I mean by that is that what also creates tension in the moment itself, in the moment of the sex that the characters are having, is that you want to create for the reader, you want to create an effect where you're both a voyeur, a comfortable voyeur, and an uncomfortable voyeur. And so with a comfortable voyeur, I mean, you use words that are slightly more poetic, that are obscuring, because then it gives this effect of a curtain washing over a window and that you can't quite see what is happening, right? If you describe, for example, an elbow or a fingertip, then we're focusing in, like we're zooming in on small little details. And if you're describing abstract language, we don't quite see the scene. And then if you contrast that with a really harsh word like fucking or cunt or something like that, then you create texture because you have the soft and the obscured, and suddenly you're fully in it. And that creates slight discomfort as well in you as a viewer. And that tension between comfort and discomfort, I think that's where erotica exist.
Okay, but how did you get into this?
Both more embarrassing and boring than I hope that the answer. I wish I could give you. I was scouted one day because I was on the streets declaring the virtues of erotica. But the truth is that I was just a freaky little kid who read a lot of. I was always looking for sex and stories. That took me a lot. I was a full adult when I read her. But God, J.M. Owl. I forget the name of that series, but she wrote this story about a prehistoric people and their trials and tribulation. As in like I forget the name of the series, but there's a lot of sex in it. And I remember a friend at school gave me, especially the second book, which was called something with horses, The Valley of the Horses. And yeah, it's just 80% sex. And it was this secret, I think, that young girls passed around. Because the book really had this outwardly appearance of just being a very a tame historical novel. And it really wasn't. Very problematic as well, sort of in looking back at the entire series, which went in all kinds of different directions. But yeah, after that one, I kept on reading books. I kept on looking for that moment of sex. And I think over the years, what happened is I started reading this when I was, I think, 13 or so. And I was myself so excited to have sex myself. But something happened, I think, in that obsession is that also through being so focused on it and through looking forward to it and creating all these fantasy about what it might be like, I also became terrified. Rather than, as I grew older, rather than actually experimenting with people, I just completely disappeared into these stories. But eventually, as I got older and I went and studied and met people, everything ended up fine. But it took me a very long time to get there, to really tear down that wall of anxiety, all those expectations that I had built up for myself. But in that process, I have spent just a lot of time with novels, with stories, and also with other people's stories. Because what happened is that I end up just having all these random facts about sex. And so I'd have a lot of friends who would end up.
You've become an expert on it.
I became a little expert, a little baby expert. And I would give my friends this, all these pieces of advice that I ever had sex myself. And
oh, that's so funny. When you originally were seeking it out, was it a matter of stumbling upon it and it being titillating and it excited you and so you wanted to find more? Was it a matter of like self-discovery and trying to learn more about yourself through reading some of this content?
I think it's both. I think the biggest part of it is that it's a way, it's like going on a roller coaster, right? You get to experience the thrill of it without actually, you're not actually in free fall. You are safe. And when you read sex in a book, you get to experience the danger of vulnerability and the danger of coming that close to a person. I say danger, sometimes it's actually dangerous. Sometimes it's emotionally dangerous. Sometimes it's just scary without being dangerous. And on the page, you can do all of that without actually, you can put the book away whenever you want to. You can close it. You don't have to go through it. And also at the end of the day, you live vicariously through a character, right? You are the voyeur.
It's an exquisite voyeurism.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I was looking for a safe way to experiment and a safe way to lean into sexuality as a young girl. And I think especially for young girls, there's not a lot of spaces where we can experiment with our sexuality in a way that is socially acceptable. So in my secret little books, I could do that.
Yeah, Al, do you have other books that are coming out this year that you're excited about that you want to shout out?
Oh my gosh, yes. So there's this book coming out in October called Feast While You Can. It's lesbian horror. Oh. And it's written by Anjuli Datta and Michaela Clements, and they write together. They're a writing duo. And I've had the massive pleasure of already reading an early draft. And it is terrifying and it is so sexy. If you want to read, speaking of good erotica, that book just completely blows so much out of the water.
I like the intake of breath. That was, I wish the viewers had a little.
You're sweating.
You are. You were like, I think the hand, I think you touched your mouth even. That was like all of it.
This is radio. We should not be able to.
That's exactly right. We're just describing.
Thank you. Oh, fantastic. It is also just beautifully written. And I don't want to say too much about it, but I think it's going to be a great contribution to queer literature in general.
Cool. So
that's awesome.
Thank you for joining us. We're so excited to share your book with everyone.
It's so wonderful. Great. It really, it's such a fantastic book.
Thank you so much.
And I hope the rest of launch goes well in the UK. And then here.
Well, to you, yes.
Yeah. We'll talk to you soon. Day. Brett, what a great group of authors.
Amazing. No, and these books are fantastic.
I hope everyone has a great reading week.
Yes.
And next week, we're rounding out our April.
Final week of April.
I can't believe it. April. Yeah. April's zooming by. This year is just, January was endless. And now it's a runaway train. So here we go. Okay, bye.
Bye.